Today is July 30th, 2014, and this is episode number 265 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffett, enfant terrible. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on anything or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
I picture you twirling the fine point ends on your mustache when you say that.
Enfant terrible?
Yes.
The terrible baby.
Yes, but it's the way you say it.
Mary Michelle's.
Ooh la la.
Indeed, ooh la la. So, golly, is it Wednesday already?
It is. I know, time flies.
And it's like late on Wednesday. We're getting off to a late start here.
Yeah, well, you know, some days go like that. And it may very well be that we started with an early schedule, and thanks to our close proximity to the event horizon, it is now only moments later evening.
That is a curious theory you have, sir.
Yeah, but the view, fantastic.
Yes. Oh gosh, love that view.
Yeah.
Love that view. Well, let's see. Last week, was that last week when we talked to Dave? That was last week, wasn't it?
That was last week when, we started off a discussion on daily observations and carried it over into Apple Context Machine. And boy, howdy, we survived both.
We did. We did survive both. We did survive both, and it was a fun topic. I wrote another one of the reasons why we're getting off to a late start today is I wrote a fairly epic rant once again about Amazon dealing with something that's arisen in the last that arose yesterday.
You know, I'm really surprised. Yeah, I'm really surprised you wrote something, because I really haven't picked up any vibe from you that you have a strong feeling about this.
Right. I spend my time hiding it, but we're not going to talk about that on today's show. Instead, we're going to start off talking about Ford ditching BlackBerry for iPhone for its corporate employees.
It's Amazon's fault, isn't it? Oh, wait. No, Amazon. Sorry.
They're adopting the Amazon Fire Phone. That is not happening. So Ford announced, they actually just made a point of announcing that they're switching 9,300 corporate employees who have phones to iPhone over the next, 2.5 years or so, like 3,300 of them before the year is out. And then another 6,000 over the next 2 years. And that includes employees who are still on feature phones and flip phones.
You know, I find this very interesting on a couple levels. First, because Ford felt compelled to announce to the world that they're ditching BlackBerry.
Mm-hmm. You would think that would be the sort of thing that Apple would announce.
Right.
But Apple doesn't announce things like that.
No, but all I can figure is that either Ford has become so disenchanted with BlackBerry that they're like, you know what? Not only are we dropping your product, but we're going to do a press release because screw you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think... Yeah, I don't know what I don't think, but I do think that this is it's interesting, and it's you know, it comes in the wake of Apple and IBM. I don't think this is actually tied to the IBM deal. I don't think Ford is doing this deal through IBM, but it does come in the wake of the alliance announced between IBM and Apple for IBM to provide enterprise services on Apple's mobile devices to enterprise customers.
You know, that's true. And if this was linked in some way to Apple and IBM's partnership, I'm certain that would have been part of the press release, because that would be a big feather in Apple and IBM's cap, saying, look, it's already rolling out and doing great. And I don't think that Apple and IBM are really going to have anything happening until this fall.
If even then, I mean, it takes time to put this stuff together. It takes a lot of time to put this stuff together.
It does. And we know that the earliest that IBM is going to be out and about with their little roadshow explaining what the whole alliance is going to be able to do for companies, that doesn't even start until October.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not expecting any big announcements of partnerships coming out of this with other companies before that.
Right. And tied to that is the fact that it's still being advertised. Ford is advertising for a "quote unquote digital worker - mobile productivity portfolio analyst," whose job includes "quote the global the primary focus through early 2015 on the global deployment of corporate iPhones." So, and I think it's for some reason I found that particularly interesting that they're hiring someone whose job is strictly F. It's just I guess it's, you know what it is? It's, we've come so far from the days when no one in IT was doing anything for any kind of Apple product, especially in particular going back to the days when the Mac was Apple's product. Mm-hmm. So, there's 9,300 of these devices. Of course, there's going to be people dedicated to running them and to managing them from the IT side. But it's curious to actually see the proof of that. So we've come a long way as Apple observers. Apple has come a long way for us to observe them, is really what I'm saying.
Yes. Yeah, Apple products have gone from being a sort of pariah in IT departments to being something that many IT teams must embrace or face being released so that other people that will embrace the products can come in and do their job.
Right. And, you know, that's kind of the exact opposite of the days when you couldn't get a job if your experience was Apple support, and the people that were supporting Macs in a lot of large corporations were employees who were doing other things. They weren't IT people.
That's true. Yes, back in the days when I was consulting all the time, I was a liaison in many cases between the graphic arts departments in big companies and the IT staff. So, like, I was actually hired as an independent consultant to come in and deal with an IT department on behalf of specific divisions and companies. I mean, and that's crazy that would have to happen. But I'm glad that I was able to figure out how to make that work and help out a lot of people. But I don't think, for the most part, I would need to offer a service like that. Well, I'm not consulting anymore, but if I were, I don't think I need to offer a service like that anymore.
Probably not.
Yeah, I mean, there would probably be some rare exceptions, but for the most part, I have a feeling that the days of me needing to offer a service like that are past, or anyone needing to offer that service.
Right. So another interesting aspect of this is BlackBerry's statement about this deal. I found it so telling. And let me actually read it. So this was a statement provided to Bloomberg. Wait, am I doing Bloomberg right? Is this Bloomberg that was the source for this? Oh, my goodness. Boy, let's make sure that we delete this so that people don't know what a numbnut I am. Yeah, Bloomberg. So here's the corporate statement. Why, this is from BlackBerry. While we can't comment on this customer, i.e. Ford, we understand that there is diversity and choice in the market. Enterprises should think twice about relying on any solution built on the foundation of a consumer technology that lacks the proven security benefits that BlackBerry has always delivered. And reading between the lines, the way I take that is the BlackBerry is chastising Ford for being too stupid to understand the value proposition that BlackBerry brings to market.
That's pretty much what my takeaway is, too. And I can see why they would want to chastise on some level, because this has to hurt, and it erodes the credibility of BlackBerry even more. Each time BlackBerry loses a big company, then they become less relevant in the marketplace, and I'm certain that overall there's less trust in them as a company.
Yeah, but the way to say that is that every day companies choose BlackBerry for our proven reliability and security in the corporate space. Nobody manages corporate communications as securely, safely, and robustly as we do. That's the way to say that. Saying enterprises should think twice about doing this, that is just so amateur.
It is. And what you just said off the cuff is so much better than what they rolled out. They should have paid you.
Yeah, you know how much thought I put into that?
Clearly more than they did.
2 seconds. 2 seconds of thought, and I am not a PR professional.
And they should have paid you to come up with their statement in response to Ford. If I were you, I would demand payment in cash.
I'll see how that works out for my consulting services. And, you know, but maybe we shouldn't be too surprised that this would be BlackBerry's response, because when that IBM Apple deal was announced earlier this month in July, John Chen is the CEO of BlackBerry. He dismissed the alliance and he likened it to, quote unquote, two elephants dancing. And that sort of dismissiveness, you know, BlackBerry has dismissed Apple since the iPhone was released, and they've gotten their asses handed to them by the iPhone.
Oh, in a serious way.
And they have not cottoned on to the fact that they probably shouldn't be just dismissing Apple, that they need to, you know, I mean, remember, right? We had the iPad killer, the playbook, the BlackBerry playbook. And, you know, that was just going to crush the iPad because it ran Flash.
Yeah, and it didn't have an email client.
Without an email client.
Yeah, did it ever get an email client? I think it died before it ever got that far.
About a year. I don't know if they ever gave it an email client. It clearly didn't matter if they did. You know, and they've also been dismissive of the iPhone. You know, they were all proud of their keyboards. God, I remember there's this one commercial. It's a BlackBerry commercial, and it's just really, really. The actor may be quite intelligent, but the way he was made up, and the way they quoted the things they had him say, and the way they had him act, it's like, you know, because, you know, it has a keyboard because, you know, that's important to me. It's like, I cannot imagine making that one of the center points of a national advertising campaign.
Well, keep in mind, they had co-CEOs.
And that's true. This was before John Chen. This is before the guy who just dismissed the Apple-IBM alliance as two elephants dancing.
Yeah, and so they were running two CEOs, and the two elephants dancing thing, clearly, he has never seen Fantasia. You can take large animals that would otherwise appear ungainly, and they can dance beautifully.
It is true. It is true. And we also have, and this is kind of like my favorite. This is my favorite part of the story. It's not directly related to the Ford story, but it is indirectly related. And it was from John Swainson, who was a head of global software business for Dell. And Dell is a company who has an epic history of making erroneous proclamations about Apple and offering Apple advice that Apple probably didn't need.
It's you are so kind with the way you phrased that.
I am so, yes. So, you know, we've got the days of Michael Dell saying that Apple, actually, was it Michael that said it? I think it was Michael that said this. Or Kevin Rollins. Kevin Rollins and Michael Dell. I'm trying to get both of these guys right. Anyway, one of them said that, you know, Apple ought to just close their doors and sell off their assets and give the money back to shareholders. You know, today Dell's worth about a 20th of what Apple is. We've also got those people switch to make candy smell. I'm looking for my quotes. I can't find them.
Oh, look for the little dashy line things.
Oh, you got the two of them?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you just have a nasty encounter with gravity?
I did not. However, I thought, considering the level of quality that our interns have been providing us for service, that I'd go ahead and bring in my own office manager, Nightshade.
Oh, right.
And Nightshade has decided that it was time to start reorganizing my desk without consulting with me first. I think she was quite surprised by her results and won't be doing that again, at least during this show.
I see. I see how that works. And then we have more recently, actually much more recently, Apple Death Knell 55, where Dell said that the iPad will fail in enterprise. Certainly prescient. Anyway, rich history of this company's executives smack talking Apple and being wrong about it.
Well, in Dell's defense, they have an impeccable track record.
It's an enviable track record. Enviable track record. So here's what Mr. John Swainson said. Quote, I do not think that we take the IBM. Let's start over. I do not think we take the Apple IBM tie-up terribly seriously. I think it's just made a good press release. I have some trouble understanding how IBM reps are going to really help Apple very much in terms of introducing devices into their accounts. I mean, candidly, they weren't really good. They weren't very good at doing it when it was IBM logoed products. So I do not get how introducing Apple logoed stuff is going to be much better. It's one of the most clueless statements. That guy should have been terminated right there. It is such a clueless statement. It is such a bad attempt at denying reality and twisting reality to match some sort of delusional vision.
Brian, I think you're being a little harsh. They can't actually fire him on the spot because the PR computer systems and the HR computer systems are not linked.
Maybe not. Yeah. But it's just, I don't know. It's just interesting. And all the while, Apple has been gaining share in enterprise. And it's funny, is much as Android has taken share away from Apple in the consumer space, especially at the low end, at the corporate level, Apple has eaten BlackBerry's lunch. And Apple has eaten Windows Phone lunch, what little lunch they brought to the table. And it's Apple that's really, really remaking mobile enterprise.
Yeah, Windows didn't bring lunch to the table. They just brought a snack pack.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's an interesting development. It's interesting that a company like Ford, you know, this long established manufacturing icon, you know, this huge company. It is only 9,300 global employees because these are the corporate employees as opposed to factory workers. So it's an interesting development.
It is, and you say only 9,300. but it's a significant 9300.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, it's because really what this is saying is the automotive industry is moving to Apple products instead of BlackBerry.
Yeah, well, I don't know. There's a lot of other companies in the automotive world besides Ford.
Right, but Ford is part of a bigger company, GM.
No, it's not.
And isn't Ford part of GM? Nope. What do I know? I drive a Volvo.
Ford, Chevy is part of GM.
Oh, all right.
Ford is a separate company, and Chrysler is still, well, Chrysler Daimler is a separate company, and GM is a separate company.
All right. Okay. Well, let's have the interns, not Nightshade, because she's just throwing crap around today. Let's have the interns edit out the part where I said that so that I don't look like a numbnut.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Sure. Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. I'll scratch your editing back if you scratch mine.
Not a problem.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. Well, let's talk about Facebook.
Yeah. Facebook is kind of frustrating in general, but it seems this week they're really rubbing a lot of people the wrong way. And for those of you that don't know why this time, it's because they've already introduced their Messenger app, which takes the messaging component out of the private messaging component out of the Facebook app for the iPhone and iPad and makes it its own thing. They had already pushed iPhone owners into using the app. Now they've pushed iPad owners into using the app, but they've taken it a step further where instead of if you have the app installed, it's just used by default. You just simply have to use the app now.
Right. Right. So you used to be able to do the, you know, it's part instant messaging and it's part messaging service, like, you know, where you can leave a message for somebody. You used to be able to do that within the Facebook app, just like you can do it within the Facebook website in your browser.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Facebook launched this separate app. Of course, they also bought WhatsApp, which is at this point still an unrelated messaging service. Probably going to be right. Combined. Facebook
spent. I think that's a safe bet.
$19 billion Facebook spent on that nonsense. And now, because Facebook wants us to use the messaging app separately, since Facebook wants to be a messaging platform per se, the company has just decided to artificially force us to use it. The separate app.
And for some people, it's a matter of why would I want to have multiple apps? And for other people, it's the principle of splitting out the app. So they feel like they're in a position now where they are being inconvenienced and they don't know why.
Well, but I do. And they're being inconvenienced because it fits with Facebook's delusions of platforminess. You know, Facebook very much wants to
What's
be
that term again, Brian?
A delusion of platforminess.
That's just awesome. I absolutely love that. Delusion of platforminess.
Well, you know, Facebook, like, they do you remember when, like, Facebook apps were going to be a thing?
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to compete with the App Store with Facebook apps, and you make apps for the Facebook app, and that Facebook would distribute these through the Facebook App Store or whatever they called it, and then you'd run all these apps from within the Facebook app. Do you remember this?
Yeah, and I'm surprised they didn't come up with a term like the FAP Store because. Well, actually, now that I say it, I understand exactly why they didn't come up with it. But yes, I totally remember that.
Different demographic.
Different, totally different demographic.
And then, of course, we had the Facebook phone. Right? Remember
Can
that?
Can you even still buy that?
No, you can't buy it. Well, maybe used. I think they pulled it.
Yeah, I mean, like, you can't walk into a phone store and buy a brand new Facebook phone. I'm assuming.
And then there was Facebook Home. which was you know, the turning your Android device into basically a Facebook
phone. Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, all of these were efforts by Facebook to be a platform. And the problem is, we don't want Facebook to be a platform. We don't need Facebook to be a platform. We're not interested in Facebook as a platform. And I don't just mean you and me. I don't just mean geeks. I don't just mean the geeky folks that are listening to us.
It's clearly pretty much everyone, because these products fizzled out and disappeared.
Right. And yet, I guess Mark Zuckerberg still has these delusions of platforming us. He still wants his company, still wants Facebook to be a platform. And he, you know, this messaging thing, he's trying to make it into a thing. And you know what? It ain't gonna work.
You know, I have mixed feelings in general about companies splitting out their apps into focus functions. But on the Facebook thing, I'm disappointed that it has happened, because it's breaking out the core functionality of Facebook from a user standpoint, which is communication. And now you have to have multiple Facebook apps to communicate.
Right.
And that
I'm hardly interested in the one app.
Yeah, you know,
But I'm an outlier.
I do like the Facebook message app on the iPhone for when I'm doing private messaging with people, because it's a one-trick pony, and so it's just this very simple interface. I have a list of my messages, and that's it. As opposed to the Facebook app itself, which is just a convoluted mess.
And yeah, but I personally would rather keep my Facebook experience in as compact a form as possible.
And I'm totally with you, and I agree completely. So I would rather have Messenger or Message or Messages, whatever they call it, in the Facebook proper app, and that's the end of it. I just have one app for everything. But right now, you have the Facebook app, you have the Messages or Messenger app, and then you have the paper app, which are all different apps for doing in many cases, the same features in Facebook. So what are you supposed to use?
Yeah. Twitter.
Yeah. Twitter. That's right. Yeah, so in this case, no, I really don't think they should have split it apart. There is an app that's relatively recently split apart that to me totally makes sense, even though I know a lot of people are pissed off about it. And I think in many cases, they don't understand why they're pissed off. They're just, it's two apps. And so when Foursquare split their apps into the Foursquare app and the Swarm app, and what they did made sense to me. They looked at the functions that people do, and they found out that there were two sets of functions, and people stuck within one of these two camps almost exclusively. Hmm. So instead of having a single app that does all the stuff and people are having to jump around to find just the parts they need, they took those two clusters and split them apart. So you have the I want to check in and just see where my friends are app, and that's Swarm. And then you have the I want to do the social discovery and find the other businesses and do kind of a more Yelpy thing, and that's Foursquare. And so that split totally made sense, because now it's so much easier for me to do the check-in thing and keep up on where my friends are. And I'm actually liking the Swarm app a lot. I took the Foursquare app off my iPhone and just have Swarm now. But for a lot of people, they're just seeing it was split apart and that's stupid, and so now I'm out.
Right. I can understand.
And I can understand that too. But yeah, I am now a Swarm guy.
All right, Mr. Swarminess.
Yeah, I'm a swarmy kind of guy sometimes.
Yeah.
But back to the Facebook thing, I think Facebook is missing the point and forgetting about the service that they need to provide to end users. And they need to provide services to us in such a way that we will use them, because we are, after all, the product.
Yeah, but and this is a big but of Sir Lancelotian proportions. Sir Lancelotian.
You need to get a Mix-a-Lot reference in there too.
Oh, Mix-a-Lot. Sorry, I said Sir Lancelot. Good Lord. Oh my goodness, I'm that guy. I like this rap music. That's Sir Lancelot fella. He's really interesting. I think he has a lot of valid social commentary to make. Anyway,
he's a swell gentleman.
Mate, let's just pull that out. Let's just pull that out too. So, you know, we don't need anybody to know what a nun that I am. So, big butt. Facebook, Microsoft, they both mistake their customers as assets to fulfill their corporate goals, rather than understanding that their job is to provide a product that their customers want.
Yeah, well, I think Facebook has a different idea of who their customer is than you do. And I think they see their customer as advertisers.
Well, that's true. I guess you're right, and that's a valid point. But let's compare it to Google. We are also the product for Google, but Google understands that the way to get our product, us, is to provide us with services and products that we want, need, that are innovative, etc.
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, Google gets that they need to make it easy for us to want to give them all kinds of information.
The closest thing Google has done in a similar mistake as to what Facebook is doing right now with this messaging app business is when the company tried to force all of us into Google Plus by making Google Plus the anchor to a ton of other services. That's the closest that mm-hmm. they've come to trying to get we the customer, or we the product, as the case may be, to do what fit their corporate goals, as opposed to really just focusing on making great stuff that we want to use.
And and in the end, it hasn't hurt Google that much, because they still have gobs of data they're collecting on us all the time, and people are willingly handing it over. Facebook, they need to learn from Google, which is actually kind of scary, but they need to learn from Google and learn to make it easy for us to want to give them information. And I think in the case of splitting out Messenger and forcing people to use it that as a separate app, that they have lost sight of that key point. Make it easy for us to want to give them information.
Yeah, one of the things that they said in their statement about this was that they wanted to be able to offer a better app, so they're concentrating their efforts into the messaging app. And you know what? That doesn't fly with me when you spend $19 billion buying WhatsApp. You can clearly afford to support two separate apps.
Yeah, and you know, maybe they could take some of that money and just work on making one app that's really good, because I think the Facebook app itself is pretty much a big bucket of crap.
Fair enough.
And part of that goes in to the way Facebook tries to force us into using the app. The way they are trying to force us into using the app in a different way than we may want.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's part of what I'm talking about, where they're like Microsoft.
Yeah. And, right. And that's really frustrating. And a perfect example of that is the timeline for posts. Mm-hmm. They have the news view, and then you can have the chronological view. and it always defaults to the news view. So it's like news view and most recent.
Which is their filtered view. It's the view that they think will keep you most engaged.
And it's the view that just flat out pisses me off.
Yeah.
Because I'm seeing stuff in what appears to be a random order, and I'm not seeing the content that I want, which is a chronological listing of posts from my friends.
It's got to be in order. It's got to be in order. If it's not in order, it's wrong.
Yes.
Wrong.
Totally wrong.
Definitely wrong.
And they've made it even worse because now they've taken it to the point where, I mean, they've already been doing the thing where it will periodically just switch back to the news view instead of
solid.
The most recent view. Yeah. And they keep making it more difficult to get to the most recent setting on the iPhone. So now you have to go into the more section and then scroll down a list and then eventually you find this thing. And it's
and that's not even getting into the way they retroactively change the rules all the time on what they have access to and what they're going to allow third-party advertisers to have access to. All that stuff. Yeah. It's just I don't like it. I think that Facebook has in its future a major change in management or a major fall. That's what I think.
That wouldn't surprise me. I think both are equally plausible, and it's very frustrating the way Facebook is so cavalier with our information and our privacy. And considering how cavalier they are, it really surprises me that they're making it more difficult for us to use parts of their service.
Mm-hmm.
So they must have some other master plan that you and I are not privy to that makes this logical. But right now, today, to me, it is not logical.
Right.
I'm kind of Mr. Cranky Pants today, aren't I?
Yes, I like it. I like it.
I can tell.
I like it.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to something. No, it's still just cranky stuff.
So this is our cranky episode, isn't it?
Apparently, it is our cranky episode. So we put out a call on Twitter at the last second for topic requests.
And at the last second, that's not just a figure of speech.
It's really correct.
The last second.
It's right. And Tenix got back to us, and he said, and I'm going to just quote because I think it's funny. PC market reports and their decisions to exclude iPads but include Surface and still managing to get them wrong. Discuss. Well said, sir. Well said. So what he's talking about, there's a couple of reports. Aaron Dilger. One of my favorite writers in the Mac web. He writes for Apple Insider. Did his usual fantastic job of digging into market share reports from the usual suspects, IDC and Gartner and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And he broke it down. One of the things he was looking at is how they don't include iPads as PC sales.
But they do include Microsoft Surface.
Yes.
As PC sales.
Right. And the thing is,
I have a feeling that we have the same opinion on this, which is not what people are going to expect.
It's probably not what people are going to expect. Yeah. I'm actually okay with that separation.
So am I.
You know, in part because... kind of in part, there's so many reasons. For one, there's no doubt that a lot of iPad sales are taking the place of some PC sales. And if you look at iPad and you look at Mac, Apple is the biggest PC maker on the planet. That's a very reasonable way to look at the market. But in terms of breaking out share, Aaron Dilger noted that Canalys does not break out iPad sales. and actually does include them both together with Max Ales. And again, that's also it's a very legitimate way to do it. The thing about IDC and Gartner, not including iPad sales, is that, first of all, iPad doesn't run the same operating system as the Mac, which is, you know, iOS versus OS X.
Right. And yes, for those of you that just sat bolt upright in your chair and said, yes, they are running the same operating system. Yes, we do know that. It's just the upper levels are different. We know the underpinnings are the same.
Yeah, they don't run the same software. Kind of roll with, yeah, underpinnings, yeah, just roll with us on that. Underpinnings are the same. They share a lot of code. They're utterly related, and that's actually one of the strengths of Apple. But they are also separate and built for their respective tasks. And that's the key here. The iPad was built for its respective task of being a media tablet, as it was, as the market share people used to look at them. And the Surface is built as both a tablet and a laptop.
It's a PC that lost its identity.
Yeah, you know, and we've talked a lot about how one of Microsoft's core problems is the fact that they want the same experience on all their devices, and just how wrong that is. How Microsoft is missing the boat when trying to make a media tablet be a laptop.
Yeah, Microsoft's problem, just on one level, in the whole tablet space that Apple was able to overcome, was just manning up and accepting that you can have different platforms.
Yeah, and manning up and
be all the same. Yeah,
and manning up and accepting the fact that it's okay to let Windows go. You know, we talked about that too. That has crippled and paralyzed Microsoft. Apple willing to kill anything. Apple would kill iOS tomorrow if it had the next thing to replace it with.
Sure. And it would do the same thing with OS X.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, in a heartbeat. And we've seen it with individual technologies, you know, the floppy disk, the CD drive.
ADB. SCSI.
FireWire. FireWire, which we love. We love FireWire.
Well, FireWire's not really dead. They just swapped out how we access it.
They just don't include it anymore.
Yeah.
it's dead. And the 30-pin dock. You know, the iPad mini to the iPad nano. Right? I mean, just all the time. That's Apple's. Apple will ruthlessly sacrifice yesterday's awesomeness, yesterday's leader.
Did you just leak information? Because you just mentioned the iPad Nano.
Did I? iPod, sorry. The iPod Mini.
I thought we were going to have to delete another piece out of the show. But that's okay. You just covered brilliantly. No one will ever know about your insider sources.
The iPod Mini went to the iPod Nano. You know, you had the most successful iPod of all time. And they just killed it. They just killed it. Just killed it and said, no, we're doing something different.
And I remember when that announcement happened, I actually sat back in my chair and I'm like, what the hell is Apple thinking?
Yeah, yes.
And for a moment, I was really concerned that Apple had just gone completely crazy, or for our British friends, completely mental. And that was it. And we were going to watch this ugly, ugly downward spiral. And yet, that's not what happened at all.
Right. It is not what happened at all. So anyway, Apple, always willing to kill yesterday's leader in favor of the next big thing. Microsoft, utterly terrified of Windows losing its legitimacy, its you know, prominence, whatever. And so they'll do anything they can to artificially prop it up, including crippling the Surface with both the functions of a laptop and the functions of a tablet. So, because
again, a PC that lost its identity.
A PC that lost its identity, or a tablet that never found its identity. Either way, yeah. Both are, you know, two sides of the same coin. And so I'm kind of okay with IDC including Surface Surface sales as PC sales, and not including iPad sales, because the iPad is a different thing.
Yeah, the iPad's a different class of device to me. The Surface is a confused laptop.
Right. Right, and then now another aspect of all this was the...
Wait, I have to interrupt for just a second. Oh, yeah. Until you brought us back to that point, we had wandered around enough that I was trying to figure out how to discreetly ask you what was the topic we were on.
That's funny.
That's awesome. But since we can edit this out, no one will ever know. So please, continue.
Right. This is the editing episode.
Right.
Right. The revisionist episode. So Philip Elmore DeWitt at Fortune Magazine. I like Philip as well.
He's awesome.
He is awesome. He did a piece based on really what, you know, the bulk of his piece was just reprinting what someone who used to work at IDC. Yes, IDC. Someone who used to work at IDC, how they go about getting their various numbers. And he said in most quarters, the team starts with OEM guidance and, depending on the country, does some by country cross-checking. However, for the U.S. team, we just did some systematic adjustments to the vendor guidance and called it a day. For example, we knew that a lot of Macs were transshipped to Miami, Latin America, so we took some percentage of Macs and reallocated them from the U.S. to a smattering of Latin countries, effectively modeling the market, but with no low-level data. No low-level data. All modeled.
Am I alone in seeing where there's potentially a problem with this?
Yeah, no, you're not alone. And furthermore, that the process that ensued was a marvel of obfuscation. Obfuscation. I always mispronounce that. The leader of the tracker team figured out a way to rationalize away all the extra units that this guy, I didn't quote, had said he had found. It was politically impossible to know. It was politically impossible to force the extra units on the regions because it would introduce gross distortions to the historical trends. So the mantra became preserve the growth rates, to hell with the actual numbers, even though the growth rates are fiction.
That's completely mental.
It is rubbish.
It is
rubbish. And it is...
Go ahead. How can you possibly create an entire business model on making crap up and then selling it to people that need this data to actually have their businesses run?
Yeah, and of course, keep in mind, this guy could be lying. Not Philip.
He could be.
Philip Source could be lying.
Right, yeah, Philip Source.
I actually trust Philip to have vetted this properly.
Yeah, he's Philip, a smart guy.
And he's also the real deal when it comes to a journalist. He's old school. Mm-hmm. So his source said the industry itself was aware of these issues, but agreed to maintain the fiction because it was convenient. Most vendors kept their own numbers, but referred to IDC for public purposes. Real executives got real compensation based on our numbers. There were other games played, but that's for another time. So there's more to the story.
I can't wait to hear the follow-up, but holy crap. Here's all of this trending data that is fake.
Yeah. Yeah, and this came in the wake. IDC, we didn't bother reporting on this one, but IDC and Gartner had both reported lower Mac sales. And it turned out Apple actually crushed Mac sales and actually saw a significant increase in Mac sales in a market that was otherwise down. Of course, we say it was down because that's what IDC and Gartner tell us. But it's interesting.
Before this report came out from Philip, I was saying, and actually I think it was on a TDO episode, that the difference between what Apple reported and what IDC was reporting goes to show how difficult it is to accurately track the product sales. And now I feel kind of stupid because I was missing this piece that we didn't have yet, but Or no, I feel as if I was gullible. Because the reality is, it wasn't difficult to track. They were just making up whatever they wanted.
Yeah.
That's really crappy.
Yes. Yeah, it's really, really makes me... It makes me re... The whole thing makes me... Actually, I really don't care what IDC and Gartner had to say. Not until they can prove they're using a methodology that actually works.
Well, I'm seeing a business opportunity for us now. You have your D&D dice?
Yeah, I do. Although I'm gonna have to get them out of the drawer where they
Well,
I don't actually have them handy. Golly.
Oh, that's too bad, because we could have started our own business right now and gone head to head with Gartner and IDC.
It's true. I do have my dice, so you know we're not out of this business yet.
Okay. Well, we have your dice. We both know how to use numbers and Keynote. I think we're good to go. Let's come up with a domain. We'll start selling our data. And we will be at least as accurate as both Gartner and IDC.
At least.
What could possibly go wrong?
Nothing. Nothing could possibly go wrong.
I'm in.
All right. Well, thanks, Tenex. We appreciate the suggestion.
Yeah. That was a fun topic.
Indeed. I think we're done.
I think we are, too. Yeah. And you know, we may have been cranky, but at least we're lovable.
Oh, yeah.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening. Why don't you give me a follow on Twitter? I'm Jay Gamut there.
Oh, yeah. Please give me a follow, too. I'm TM O'Brien. That's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed, because we think you're cute.
I definitely think you're cute. We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.